Chapter 20. The next morning, Nisha once again awoke to the sound of crunching sand. Nisha turned over to Rachel, who began to stir. "Rachel, box here," she whispered. Nisha put on some clothes and walked outside, squinting into the morning light. Box stood stiffly erect and looked out at the colony as the first rays of the sun reflected off the towers. Over 1,800 towers stood at least 6,000 feet tall, with more than 100 being built every day by uncountable numbers of drones. Nisha walked over to Bach and admired the colony with him. "I admit your colony is a beautiful sight. It's an enormous work of art." "Humans and Emanji appear to think the same way on the concept of art," Bach said. "What's considered beautiful might be different between our species. However, our concepts of beauty are similar. We both have difficulty defining art." Rachel walked outside the tent and joined in on the conversation. "I can't define the word art. I can read the definitions, but every person has a different definition. I wish I had a dollar for every time I heard someone say, 'That isn't art,' as they walked around in an exhibit. As I get older, my definition of art is no clearer than in my younger days. However, the design of this colony is art."
"Good,"
Bach said. "We've always enjoyed art, especially art we can live in. Ever since we designed builder drones, we've been able to construct most things we want."
"How many drones are building the colony?" Nisha said.
"About 3 trillion right now, I think. More are being built."
"Who designed this colony?" Rachel said.
"Our group of esteemed elders voted from among 100 potential macro designs. We employ many architects who design the smaller elements of each building and hardscape element. All these elements are entered into the master design. Each drone takes a small part of the master design and constructs its portion in the order desired. These drones are skilled, but they aren't autonomous. They appear free to do what they want due to their complex motions. However, they only execute the master plan. Thousands of years ago, we learned what happens when you turn loose autonomous drones. They destroy worlds. I remember you telling us that story in your history, and with that other alien planet that was destroyed. I'm broadcasting this to the world, so I hope people listen," Nisha said.
"Don't worry," Bach said. "We won't let humans build autonomous robots. We've disabled them. They're too dangerous. We didn't want to move to another planet that was destroyed by them."
Nisha and Rachel glanced at each other with raised eyebrows.
"They won't let us build the AI robots?
I guess that's a good thing, right?" Nisha said.
"I guess so," Rachel said. "Do Emanji pursue careers like humans?"
"Please elaborate," Bach said.
"For example, I earned a PhD in genetic biology. I spent a total of 8 years of education after high school to get my degree. I was 26 when I started my career. I plan on staying in this career until I retire when I'm 75, which is at the top end of the standard age for human retirement. However, the Emanji enjoy long lifespans and high IQs. So how do careers happen? How long do they last?"
Bach thought about this question for several seconds. "Since we live to be over 400 Earth years old, we can undertake multiple careers in the human sense of the word. For example, I enjoy the study of off-Oma life, cultures, and technologies. I plan on specializing in that for my first career."
"Like me? So Emanji pursue many careers?" Nisha said.
"Yes, I'll work in many careers. There's a lot of information to be learned before one can be considered an expert by the Emanji esteemed elders. After my maturity, which is the equivalent of finishing your high school, I'll study general topics for 10 years. That's like your undergraduate university track. Afterwards, I'll choose my specialty. I'll study that for another 12 years. Afterwards, I'll be given permission to apply my knowledge in an apprenticeship for about 10 years. I'll be 62, and I'll be able to work in my specialty until I'm 300. Of course, after about 80 years, I may want to pursue other specialties, and I can if I want. I'm free to choose." Nisha glanced at Rachel in astonishment.
"He'll be 62 before starting his career, and he learns faster than we do."
Rachel glanced over at Bach.
"By 62, we're getting ready for retirement. Are you guys a bunch of workaholics?"
Bach paused for a prolonged period. Nisha and Rachel could tell Bach had trouble answering the question.
"The term workaholic implies a problematic societal dysfunction," Bach said. "We enjoy discovering the mysteries of science. Endless discoveries await us.
You may think we're advanced, but we realize our knowledge is still limited. We're a species of extreme specialization. With 80 billion of us, we all benefit from the deep knowledge of all others. That's how we accomplish so much, and why we can move all of us over 20 light years to Earth in about one human lifetime. We see humans beginning this process of specialization. This effect is amplified with greater population and higher intelligence. Your human society benefits from a small number of very smart individuals. Nisha nodded her head.
Yes, specialization accelerates improvement in the lives of all, except for mass extinction.
Yes, Bach said. Also, it saves the planetary environment. Most of us will live in this colony, which is located near the best materials for building our colony. We also built the colony here in this desert to avoid disturbing human and animal life. We wish to affect the ecosystem of this planet as little as possible.
That's good of you, Bach, Nisha said. Can we take a blood sample from you? We wish to understand your species better. We promise not to do anything to you, and we won't use the knowledge to hurt you.
That would be fine, Bach said. We aren't worried about humans. Give me your device, and I'll take a sample.
Bach examined the needle closely, running his scanner over it. It's simple. However, don't be embarrassed by this primitive needle-based device. We still use them, as you noticed from the little drones which took human blood samples a couple of weeks ago. He inserted the needle into a vibrant green-colored patch of skin near the center of his chest. Only moments before, the skin was colored a vivid blue. The blood appeared dark red in color, darker than human blood. Rachel watched the blood drain into the vacuum collection tube.
I'm not sure what I expected, but I thought their blood would be a lot different than human blood.
Why? Bach said. We rely on oxygen as most animals do on Earth. You'll find that Omanji blood is like your blood.
I don't know what to think, Rachel said.
The unknown is difficult to imagine, Nisha said. I try not to assume life outside of Earth is like life on Earth. We only recently discovered simple unicellular fossils on Mars. Every bit of added information is a surprise to us.
There's more, Bach said. There are two bodies in your stellar system with life besides Mars. I can't tell you which bodies.
Nisha raised an eyebrow. Rachel took the blood sample down to the immunology analysis tent.
Bach, can I visit Priya again? Nisha said.
Bach paused for a few seconds, which to Nisha seemed like an eternity. She tried to appear patient.
Today is domestication testing day for the humans. We want to determine whether the implants are working correctly and if the enhanced intellectual abilities are beginning to manifest themselves. We always had trouble with the Utes. Some make good pets and others don't, so we want to closely monitor the humans since they're a new species with unique issues.
Nisha felt heartbroken, but she acted upbeat. She was determined to do whatever it took to get her baby back.
Okay, can we visit with her tomorrow?
Bach paused again for a shorter time.
Yes, tomorrow or the next day, depending on what we find.
Can we visit the Utes afterwards?
Once again, Bach paused as if in a trance.
We can visit them today. Rachel returned from the immunology analysis tent.
What's happening? She said. We're going to visit the Utes today, Nisha said, masking her disappointment.
She knew she should be grateful. 3 weeks ago, she would have given anything to observe a species from another planet.
How exciting! When do we go?
Rachel said. We can go as soon as we eat breakfast. They ate quickly, while Bach walked around making everyone in the mess tent uncomfortable, despite his friendly display of flickering blue and orange skin. He was nearly fully grown, and now taller than Nisha by a foot. He appeared more muscular than a bodybuilder. The stronger gravity on Oma required strong muscles for locomotion. His tail withered as the age of maturity and the age of decision approached. Soon they drove to the edge of the colony and entered the closest transit cube through its liquid rippling exterior. Nisha leaned back as the invisible field seating interrupted her fall.
I could get used to this, she said.
So Bach, tell me more about the Utes. I know they're 5 feet tall, blue, and furry. They used to live in the forest and were slaves and now are pets. I also remember you communicate with them via hand signals because their neural network won't support implants.
That's correct, Bach said. Ute neurons don't grow around implants as well as Omanji and human neurons. A new subspecies of Ute is being developed that will be better adapted to implants. For now, we use what you would call hand sign language to communicate with them. They understand basic commands, like your domesticated dogs. They're at least as intelligent as dogs. You'll enjoy them.
Nisha and Rachel glanced at each other in anticipation. I'm excited to visit them, Rachel said.
The transport cube came to a stop in front of a beautiful, twisting cylindrical tower, the top of which couldn't be seen. We've arrived, Bach said. We're domesticating some Utes on level 429 in this tower. Follow me.
Nisha signed off her live broadcast since there's no reception inside of the towers. She continued recording for broadcast later. They walked into the tower and gazed up at its hollow and well-lit interior, which seemed to stretch to infinity.
Follow me, Bach said. This lift cube will take us to level 429.
They accelerated. If it weren't for the field seating, Nisha and Rachel wouldn't have been able to stand up against the strong G-force. As they approached level 400, they decelerated and were weightless for the next 25 levels. After that, they experienced normal gravity.
Follow me, Bach said.
They passed numerous hallways filled with strange images on the walls. Some moved in three dimensions.
Are these pictures of Oma? Rachel said.
Yes, Bach said. We're encouraged to place images and other artwork on our walls to remind us of Oma and our travels to other planets. For example, that image on the wall is from the planet you identify as Gliese 667 CF, the nearest planet to Oma, orbiting our star Phoenix.
That's how I imagined it, Rachel said. As you can see, it's a desert planet like your Mars, only it's larger than Earth.
A few primitive life forms struggle to survive there. We enjoy traveling to the equatorial regions, which are like the polar regions of Oma. The equator is a warm area with some water and native life. The habitable area is in a large canyon, too small for all of us to move there. Also, the atmosphere hurts our lungs, though we might survive there with some genetic modifications. Each habitable planet is unique. Therefore, a habitable planet that's hospitable to one planet species is rarely hospitable for another planet species. For example, Earth is marginally habitable to us. Every planet we've examined has properties which are incompatible with our biology. Humans will discover the same difficulties when they venture away from Earth. Only Earth is naturally compatible to humans. We have compatibility problems with Earth. The gravity is too weak, the sunlight is too strong, the days are too short, and the atmosphere contains too much oxygen. It's still the best planet we've found for us, though there is another one about 40 light years from here which may be better. And it's further from species AI1. We're considering genetic engineering to help us adapt to Earth's slightly inhospitable conditions.
AI1 sounds ominous. Would you say most planets that develop simple life never develop intelligent life? Nisha asked as they walked towards a large room.
Yes, Bach said. From what we can tell, far less than 1 in 1,000 planets with life forms eventually produce intelligent life. Simple life is common on habitable planets, but usually something happens along the way to stop higher life from evolving. Events such as large object impacts, volcanism, large aggressive animals, preventing smaller, smarter ones from evolving, or many other reasons may stop evolution. Even if intelligent life evolves, higher life can extinguish itself by accident. Eventually, humans will enter the second dangerous phase, in addition to powerful weaponry use, where machines or chain reactions might end everything. Even if you are aware of the danger, an artificially generated extinction event will happen in your future. We won't allow that to happen. You should be glad we're here.
Nisha glanced at Rachel and raised a skeptical eyebrow. Rachel smiled back.
They continued walking and entered an enormous room, at least the size of the one used to domesticate the humans.
This is one of 20 locations where we domesticate Utes. About 50,000 Utes are being processed in these locations. The Utes we're domesticating now were chosen from wild colonies immediately before we left. We left them alone in their family groups on the trip to Earth. They aren't as tame as the genetic lines which we've domesticated for thousands of years. We love the Utes we own, but we're hoping to breed and genetically create a better line of Utes for the future. However, we've been having difficulty with this group. They're resisting domestication in a way like humans. I think it's because they are wild. I've been told we can see one in this room over here. They walked into the room. The Ute sat human-like in a barely visible field chair. The Ute spotted Nisha and Rachel and ran behind Bach as if it were afraid, peeking out at them from behind Bach's muscular physique. This is not what I expected, Nisha said to Rachel. I had this vision of the Ewoks from the old Star Wars movies.
Me too, Rachel said. Bach called them furry creatures of the forest, so I expected Ewoks too, but he or she?
It's a female of the species, Bach said.
Okay, but she looks like a small bluish Omanji.
Bok turned slightly red for a moment.
Oops, sorry, Bok, Rachel said. We humans bear many resemblances to monkeys and other animals, so don't feel bad.
Rachel's right, Nisha said as the red faded from Bok's skin. They silently studied the Ute and she looked back at them.
She's smaller than me and so cute, Nisha said. She has those independently moving chameleon-like eyes and the six opposable fingers and toes. They're like the Omanji in that way, and they differ in some ways. They have short blue fur, and this one doesn't seem to flash colors.
She's shy, Rachel whispered.
I love the little wiggly nose and the deepest blue eyes I've ever seen. I understand why the Omanji like them as pets. They're as cute as can be. I like how she peeks out from behind Bok's back. She's adorable.
According to the trainers, she's also a lot of trouble, Bok said. Nisha smiled at the Ute and glanced at Bok.
We'll take her.
Bok went silent for a long time.
What's he doing? Rachel said.
I don't know.
Bok came out of his telepathic trance.
You can have her.
Nisha and Rachel glanced at each other and laughed.
Congratulations, you've told your first joke. That's a good one, Bok, Nisha said.
I don't understand human humor, however, I stated a fact. You can have her.
We can take her with us right now, Nisha said.
Yes, you can, Bok said. They tell me she's not trainable.
Rachel squinted.
When? She said.
You can take her to your tent as soon as I teach you how to care for her. She has been made compatible with human diseases and she has been cleaned of all microbes dangerous to Earth species.
I'm not sure how you can do that, but I'll take your word for it, Rachel said.
We haven't been sick since we met you. I noticed new microbes in my system, according to a test I took yesterday. However, I'm fine. The microbes will die or adapt in several days. The Earth's microbiome will never be the same.
Okay, what do we need to learn to take care of her? Nisha said.
I'm sending you a list of Earth foods she can eat. The Utes are mostly vegetarians. They also eat insect-like creatures on Oma. They sometimes need protein, like omnivorous animals on Earth. Many proteins found in Earth food sources are like those on Oma. The rest will be ignored by her digestive process. She will experience some initial gastrointestinal difficulties, but she'll adjust. We'll give you this food replicator to feed her. You'll have to adapt the replicator to Earth power sources. We use direct electrical current, unlike many human power systems. Next, you need to get used to caring for her, and you need to gain her trust.
Nisha knelt to appear less threatening to the Ute. She turned to Bok.
What's her name?
Bok fell silent again.
Her name is Yuva. She is 24 years old and not genetically modified. Their lifespan is 120 to 140 Earth years. Therefore, she's equivalent to a 15-year-old human. The lifespan of my Omanji ancestors before we modified ourselves was approximately 120 years. Medical care increased it from 60 years in the wild.
Nisha moved a little closer and pointed to herself.
Yuva, my name is Nisha. Yuva peeked around Bok to examine Nisha more closely. She didn't say anything audibly.
You will need to learn Omanji sign language to speak with them, Bok said.
They're primitive, but they understand basic sign language commands.
It's okay, Nisha said. I understand they used to speak an audible language. I'll try that first.
Also, I only have 5 fingers, so I can't use your hand signals.
Nisha turned to Yuva and pointed to herself.
Yuva, my name is Nisha, she repeated.
Yuva's independently moving blue eyes focused on Nisha and Rachel simultaneously. Nisha glanced over at Rachel.
I felt a chill go down my spine.
She turned back to Yuva.
Yuva, I'm Nisha.
Yuva focused on Nisha, scanning her from head to toe and back to her head again. Her eyes moved like the Omanji. She pointed at herself with 3 of her 6 fingers. And a sound came out of her mouth, which sounded like, Yuva. She pointed at Nisha and said, Nisha. Her tiny voice sounded like a clarinet. Nisha raised an eyebrow. She turned to Bok.
You told me the Utes were primitive.
That's what I've been taught, Bok said. They learn a few hand signs for some basic commands, and they don't communicate much. We've been taught that they don't speak a complex audible language. They live primitive lives, much like the lesser animals. We discourage audible speech, but this is a wild specimen.
Well, Bok, Nisha said,
Yuva appears to know how to identify individuals with spoken language. She's alert. She wasn't alert when we walked into the room. I noticed none of the other Utes looked alert. Maybe they don't want to do sign language and they're more advanced than the elders admit. That's possible. However, from what I understand, they're only cute animals, which are perfect for pets. My family doesn't have a Ute, so I have no expertise with them. Also, these wild Utes aren't modified or domesticated. The captive Utes are modified and tame. Nisha stared intensely at Bok. You told me that the Omanji wouldn't own an intelligent species as a pet. We can keep intelligent animals as pets if we enjoy them and if they aren't as intelligent as us. Some of us believe intelligent species don't make good pets. If these wild Utes are intelligent, the elders made a mistake with the Utes and the humans. That's especially true since they made the humans smarter. We've always been taught that the Utes weren't intelligent in the same way we are. We've been breeding Utes for over 500 generations to make them passive and good companions. Perhaps these wild Utes aren't good for pets. We'll see. This situation is like humans being able to have dogs as pets, but not usually wild foxes. Bok, you're experimenting with life forms before doing your research, Rachel said. This is un-Omanji-like, don't you think? Nisha nodded her head. Yes. If what you're doing is not appropriate by your own rules, you should let them go. Yuva listened while this philosophical debate went on. Bok, Yuva seems to be listening to what we're saying. That might be, but I've noticed dogs watch their human masters with equal curiosity. I'll accept your points about the humans, though. As I get to know you better, I'm having second thoughts about having human pets. I'll investigate this more closely. Yuva moved closer to Nisha and Rachel. She sniffed them cautiously, retreating from time to time back behind Bok. Over a one-hour period, and with a lot of talking, Yuva became comfortable with Nisha and Rachel. Nisha brought Yuva over to the window and pointed out things which were interesting. Yuva watched with sentient eyes. Okay, Bok, Nisha said. I think we can take her now. This seems way too quick and easy. They walked out the door and down the hallway to the lift cubes, talking casually to make Yuva comfortable. As the cube descended, Yuva became nervous and held Nisha's hand. Her hand has the texture of cat's paw, but with no claws and more dexterous fingers. Our hands aren't compatible for holding. I can only hold 3 fingers at a time, or I can hold the entire hand without interlocking the fingers. Her hands are more dexterous than human hands. Her 3 thumbs and 3 fingers are like the Omanji. They walked out of the tower, emerging as though the tower gave birth to them through a liquid crystal membrane. Nisha turned on her live broadcast as they walked to the transport cube, which transported them to the edge of the colony. Hello, everyone. We've exited the tower after visiting the Utes. I brought back a surprise, Nisha said to her video audience. Nisha turned the camera towards Yuva. Her name is Yuva. She is a Ute, which is a species the Omanji keep as pets. Isn't she the most beautiful creature you've ever seen? She's a wild and unmodified Ute from the southern continent of Oma. The Utes the Omanji keep as pets have been domesticated for several hundred generations. We'll take care of her, and we'll learn all about her. I'll broadcast live as often as I can, so keep watching. Bok had to return to his studies, which he'd been avoiding. They exited the transport cube without him and returned to their tent. So, what should we do now? Rachel said. It's dinner time, and we have a new child to take care of. Nisha smiled. I'm glad you called her a child. She's young, but she seems more self-aware than any animal I've seen. You're right. Notice how she pays attention when you speak? Yuva gazed up at Rachel. Her small voice pronounced a squeaky version of, Rachel. Oh my, Nisha said, looking at Yuva. I know, Rachel said. She looked back at her and said, Yuva. Yuva unlocked her hand from Nisha and walked over to Rachel. Rachel, Yuva said once more. She touched Rachel's face, paying close attention to every detail with her piercing blue eyes. I can't believe it, Rachel whispered, trying not to startle Yuva. It's hard to describe how she's touching me. There's an electrical current in her hands. It's subtle, but the current radiates up my arms and down my spinal cord. Yuk noob whoop ma. Yuva said as she gazed at Nisha while stroking Rachel's face. Nisha opened her eyes wide. She has a language! Bok didn't mention this. Perhaps he didn't know. The elders hide information from the younger ones, Or at least they decide to not disclose it. Just like humans.
Rachel turned to Yuva and parroted back. Yuk noob, whoopma.
Yuva's eyes and three nostrils dilated.
I felt a rush of electricity, Rachel said.
I didn't feel an electrical shock. I felt a smooth and soothing current. I like it.
I think there's more to the Utes than meets box eye, Nisha said. We need to give Yuva some intelligence tests, ASAP.
Okay, but first let's eat lunch, Rachel said.
Nisha walked with Yuva, hand partially in hand, into the mess tent with Rachel. Everyone buzzed with excitement. She brought some of Yuva's food with her, so they chose their own food and walked out to their favorite picnic table with a view of the colony. Yuva didn't have a tail. She sat like a human at the table. She glanced at the colony and looked away, holding on to Nisha with both arms.
Nisha understood a child's fear. She stroked Yuva's short blue fur and looked into her eyes.
Yuva, you're safe now.
Nisha felt a surge of soft electricity flow into her from Yuva's hands and turned to Rachel.
This is intoxicating.
I know, Rachel said. I've never been a drug user, but I've drunk wine, and this experience does resemble being drunk a little. I think I'm starting to understand why the Omanji like Utes as pets. They must get some mind-altering effect from them. We need to get her to eat. Bok told us to feed her every 10 hours, day or night. Since a day on Oma is 20 of our Earth days, there's no circadian rhythm to sync our schedule to hers. We'll figure out what to do about that.
Nisha picked up a food container Bok had given her earlier. The crunchy pellets looked like large grains of rice. She scooped some out and placed the food on a plate for Yuva. She looked down and seemed interested, but she wouldn't use the fork or her hands.
Rachel, can you get those chopsticks from the other table?
Rachel brought over several pair and placed them on the table. Yuva turned to them and said, Weeba, in her little clarinet voice. She took a pair of chopsticks out of the paper holder, inspected them with her chameleon-like eyes, and broke two of them open. She took a second pair and split them apart. Then, she placed two chopsticks between the three fingers on the left side of her left hand. She placed another two chopsticks between the other three fingers on her left hand and picked up some food pellets.
She's eating with four chopsticks at the same time, Nisha said.
My hand with its single thumb looks clumsy in comparison.
Yeah, Rachel said.
With three fingers opposing three other fingers, I guess they have more flexibility of movement. Using four chopsticks is better than two.
They watched as Yuva adeptly enjoyed her lunch.
She kept looking up at Nisha and Rachel with gratitude. When they were finished, the three of them walked back to the tent.
Her feet are like her hands, Rachel said. They're similar to the Omanji in...
Yuva looked out at the colony and hid behind Nisha in fear.
Nisha looked down at Yuva and said, Omanji?
Yuva held tightly onto Nisha's hand. Her tiny, pointy fingernails dug in.
Nisha glanced at Rachel.
She's afraid of the Omanji. Let's go. They got up and walked into the tent. We need to find out who we're dealing with.
Let's do the mirror test, Nisha said.
Good idea, Rachel said. She took a mirror, as developmental psychologists informally did with human babies, and showed Yuva her reflection. Yuva took the handle with her dexterous hands. Yuva looked into the mirror and combed her fingers through her hair. Nisha placed a dot of rouge under one eye. Yuva noticed the mark and meticulously cleaned it off, making funny little noises.
She's more self-aware than most chimpanzees or human babies, Nisha said. What else can we do to test Yuva?
Giving her human tests is unfair, but let's find out if we can invent our own way of learning about Yuva without calling the process an intelligence test.
Nisha pulled out her 16-inch iPad device, which was rolled up in her pocket. She placed the device on the viewing stand on the table and sat down next to Yuva.
She's interested in what you're doing. I wonder if she knows numbers and can write them, Rachel said. She may be capable of communicating with a written language.
Let's find out, Nisha said as she drew one dot with her finger in the upper left side of the screen.
To the right of the one dot, she placed two dots next to each other. After that, she drew three dots and four dots and so on until she got to 10 dots. She wrote the numbers 1 through 10 under the groups of dots.
I wonder if she can draw her numeric symbols under my numbers.
They watched as Yuva drew a symbol which looked like backslash under the single dot and Nisha's number 1. Under the 2, she drew backslash, backslash. Under the 3, she drew backslash, backslash, backslash.
Rachel glanced at Nisha. I'm not surprised.
Me too, Nisha said. There's more to the Utes than we were led to believe.
Yuva glanced at Nisha, as if needing approval.
Yes, yes, good, Nisha said.
Yuva looked back and continued writing under Nisha's 4, 5, and 6. Yuva drew slash, 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 and slash, slash, slash.
That's odd, Rachel said. Why would she repeat 1, 2, and 3 again?
Silence.
Oh, this mimics 6 fingers on each hand in 2 sets of 3. It's like counting on their hands, which have fingers like backslash, 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 backslash.
Yuva continued writing her numbers 7, 8, 9, and 10. She wrote backslash, 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 slash, but thicker and bolder. She continued writing 2 remaining symbols, slash, slash, and slash, slash, again darker and bolder than the first 6 numbers. She stopped and gazed at Nisha and Rachel as she wiggled her nose. They were silent for a few seconds.
That refers to the other hand. They use base 12 for their numeric system, Rachel said.
That makes sense, Nisha said. We have 5 fingers on 2 hands and we use base 10. They have 6 fingers. In mathematical terms, base 10 has no advantage over base 12. In fact, base 12 might be easier because the number 12 is divisible by more numbers. They both examined Yuva's writing.
Rachel, I had the impression the Utes are furry creatures of the forest, but Yuva is intelligent.
Yuva nudged over to Nisha and ran the tip of her long nose up and down Nisha's bare arm.
She's affectionate too, Rachel said as she smiled. Let's find out what else she can do. I'll get that pad of paper and pencil over there.
Rachel placed the pad and paper next to Yuva with no explanation and waited to see what happened. Yuva gazed at Nisha and Rachel. She picked up the pencil with 3 fingers on each side of the pencil. She huddled up against Nisha and studied Rachel across the table, moving each eye across Rachel's face and body. She did this for a long time.
What do you think she's doing? Rachel said.
Nisha watched Yuva as she studied Rachel.
I don't know, but she's focused on you.
Yuva rubbed the pencil on the bottom of the paper as if to sharpen the point. She gave Rachel 1 last glance and began to draw.
At first, they couldn't tell what she was drawing.
Yuva kept her head down. She rubbed the side of the pencil, shading the outline of a face.
I think she's drawing you, Nisha said.
What? I'm a little too far away to see.
She's drawing your face. Those are your eyes, Nisha said.
Your nose looks realistic. They watched as Yuva rendered Rachel's face with photographic quality. Within 5 minutes, she finished drawing and pushed the paper across the table to Rachel. She gazed in awe at the fine work of art.
Thank you, Yuva.
Weebo, Yuva said in her little clarinet voice.
Nisha said.
Weebo means thank you, and Weebo means you're welcome. Maybe we means you.
Rachel turned to Yuva and said,
Weeba?
Weebo, Yuva said again as she wiggled her nose.
Nisha said, I think she wiggles her nose when she's happy. Everything about Yuva is cute.
Rachel held up the portrait to the side of her face.
What do you think?
It's perfect. It's better than anything I can do. Even if I viewed this in a museum, I would be impressed. The work reminds me of one of those Leonardo da Vinci sketch drawings, don't you think?
It does. I've always wanted a portrait done, but I never thought an alien life form would be the artist. I like how she...
There's more electricity now, Nisha said.
I like it. I don't know how she does that, but it's addicting. Can you grab that Rubik's Cube off the table?
Do you think she might?
Nisha smiled. I don't know, but I intend to find out. The fastest I've solved the 3x3 cube is 6.3 seconds after a lot of practice, which is far from the human record of 3.9 seconds. However, I'm usually stumped by this 4x4 version. The current world record for the 4x4 version is 19 seconds. Rachel shuffled it and handed it to Yuva.
Weeba,
Yuva said. Yuva handled the cube deftly, turning the edges over and over as she examined it.
Those 6 fingers can manipulate that cube quickly, Nisha said. I think she's trying to solve it.
Did you ever try to solve the 4x4 cube?
Well, I remember a time in high school where some friends of mine used to see how quickly they could solve them. It's been a long time since I've tried it. I remember once where,
Nisha, look.
Yuva pushed the cube over to Nisha.
Blobbed, she said.
She solved it, Nisha said. How did she do that? She took less than 20 seconds. We weren't talking for long.
Rachel stared at the cube and at Nisha.
Maybe she should be giving us the intelligence test.
You're not kidding, Rachel.
Nisha turned to Yuva and smiled.
Good, Yuva, she said.
Weeba, Yuva said, wiggling her nose again. She's irresistible, Rachel, and smart. We need to talk with Bok about this.
Furry creatures of the forest, indeed.
Nisha contacted Bok. After dinner, they met at the tent. As soon as Bok arrived, Yuva hid behind Rachel because Nisha stood next to Bok. Yuva was afraid of all Omanji, though less afraid of younglings like Bok. Nisha held out her hand.
It's okay, Yuva. Bok is our friend.
Gradually, Yuva came out of hiding. Bok, we need to talk about Yuva, Nisha said.
Yes, what would you like to discuss?
Is she giving you trouble? I've been worried about that. We can take her back if...
Nisha picked up the solved Rubik's Cube, shuffled it, and gave it to Bok.
Can you solve this? Bok took the 4x4 cube in his hands and said, Yes, I solved the 8x8x8 cube earlier. He manipulated the cube with hands and fingers, which were like Yuva's, but without as much fur. After about 20 seconds, he solved the cube. That's good, Bok. That's close to the human world record, and you haven't practiced.
Nisha took the cube from Bok, shuffled, and handed it to Yuva. Bok turned vibrant colors as he watched Yuva turn the sides of the cube repeatedly.
I understand, Bok said. This is humor, right? I've been studying human behaviors, and humor is complicated. I can't tell the difference between serious talk and humorous talk.
In this case, you're being funny by trying to convince me.
Yuva handed the solved cube to Nisha.
Blobbed, she said.
Her little nose wiggled with happiness.
Weeba Yuva, Nisha said.
Nisha handed the cube to Bok, who inspected it curiously on all sides.
Bok, she solved that as quickly as you did.
Why do you keep utes as pets? You told me the Omanji only make pets of species that aren't as smart as they are.
Bok fell silent for a long time.
I just spoke with my parents. They don't own a ute. They don't think they're intelligent. They say the utes were bred to be good companions.
Nisha looked intensely at Bok. You've bred the intelligence out of them and replaced that with passivity. However, Yuva is wild. She's intelligent and young. You should release all the wild utes and humans. They're too intelligent to be pets. Domestication is like prison to us, and it's the same way for the utes, too. Here, Bok, go now and take this cube and test the utes, both domesticated and wild. Tell me what you find.
Yes, I'll do that, Bok said.
Oh, I want to ask one other question.
What, Nisha?
I noticed Yuva emits a pleasant electrical flow when she's happy. I get a sensation like drinking alcohol. I can tell this might be addictive, at least in humans. What can you tell me about this?
I haven't directly experienced this effect. I've never owned a ute or been close enough to one to experience their yume. Many elders say they don't know what they would do without their yume. They're addicted to it. I've always wondered why some elders are attached to them. The elders keep a lot of information from you and the other younger ones. You should have the right to know reality before you commit to merging with the telepathic collective awareness. Do you agree?
I agree, Rachel. I'm unhappy that I'm not informed. The Omanji are supposed to value knowledge more than anything else.
I'll go test the utes and learn more about them. Tomorrow morning, I'll let you know the results. Goodbye for now.
See you tomorrow, Nisha and Rachel said at the same time.
They ate dinner. Yuva wasn't ready to eat until 10 hours after her last meal, which would be sunrise. After dinner, Nisha sent a message to Bok asking him to develop a translating device so they could communicate better with Yuva. Bok agreed to begin the project. They ordered an extra cot, and Yuva attempted to rest there for the night, next to Nisha. Utes aren't used to a 24-hour day and night cycle. She got up in the middle of the night to eat what Nisha had left out for her. Unknown crispy bugs with four chopsticks.